三。
You're tuning in to Don't Sleep New York, a podcast for the New Yorker who wants to stay up on policy and politics in the city that never sleeps. My name is Arpan, and I'm joined by Matt and Rana Joy. We're three New Yorkers who are trying to become more informed about the inner workings of our city, and we want to take you along for the ride. Over the last few years, you may have noticed letter-based grades popping up on buildings that aren't restaurants. In fact, your apartment building might even have one. These letters represent a building's energy efficiency rating, a measure of how much energy is being consumed by the building overall. And the grades are a small part of a much larger plan for New York City to become carbon net neutral by the year 2050. But what do the grades actually mean? Are they changing anything? And what can you do to help? Today's episode is going to break down the recent laws behind the grading, what the grades actually mean, and how they're working so far. So let's get started. So the energy grades that have started popping up on buildings have only started showing up in, I think, like the beginning of 2020, maybe the end of 2019, right? So this is a fairly new law. What passed to actually make this happen?
Yeah, sure. So in 2019, New York City passed the Climate Mobilization Act, which was part of a, you know, landmark bill passed toward meeting the goal that you alluded to for New York City to be net neutral by 2050. Now, at the core of that legislation is the rule that we're going to talk about today, Local Law 97, which requires any building over 25,000 square feet to meet greenhouse gas emission limits by 2024 and 2030.
In order to actually meet these deadlines, obviously those things weren't set in place literally overnight. So there are timelines that give the building owners and managers time to actually upgrade their buildings, particularly with older buildings that are inherently energy inefficient. A lot of capital investment might be required to get them up to standard. And ultimately, the goal is to reduce the emissions produced by the largest buildings in the city by 40% in 2030 and by 80% by 2050. So obviously, these things are fairly far into the future, but ultimately, because so much capital improvement is required to get there, they need to start planning today.
Yeah, I think before we even get into the energy grades themselves, I think it's worth noting that about 70% of the city's emissions do come from what is categorized as stationary emissions, which is primarily buildings.
And what are the, just quickly, what are the different categories of emissions in the city?
There's waste, transportation, and then stationary emissions, which buildings fall under. And by far, that this is the biggest category. What is great about this program is it actually captures 60% of the city's buildings. So this is really trying to address the vast majority of the emitters.
So let's jump into the energy grades themselves and what they mean. Because again, you may have noticed seeing these on a lot of the buildings, and you might see your building have a B rating or a C rating. But what exactly do those mean? And is there like a universal scale for these things? Like, is a D necessarily mean it emits more carbon than a B, or is it actually relative to other buildings of that type?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Matt. So it's important to note that the buildings were actually tracking this, or supposed to be tracking this information, even before the law was passed that the grades need to be posted. The grades being posted legally as a requirement is part of just this kind of larger incentive structure to try to push more buildings to become more energy efficient. It's a shame mechanism at its core. But what it actually means is the energy rating is based on guidelines set by the EPA that compares your building or the building that we're talking about, their energy efficiency compared to a building of similar size in a similar climate. So a brownstone's rating is not actually going to compare directly to a skyscraper's building. A brownstone's rating will be based on the general let's say, average, if that's maybe how they're calculating it, but a relative score to other brownstones in a similar climate set by the EPA.
Yeah, the input points include size, occupancy, age of building, etc. So, Arpan, to your point, it's really apples to apples here.
Yeah. And so, in thinking about New York City, we've now had two cycles of this. We had the year 2020 and we had the year 2021. And performance from these buildings hasn't been that amazing. There's been slight improvements, but, you know, in 2020, it was around 44% of the 20,000 plus buildings that actually qualified to get scored received a D rating. And that only improved by a couple percentage points in 2021 to about 39% now having a D rating.
And also, to be clear, a D rating is the worst rating you can get, because an F implies you didn't even submit the necessary information to get rated.
And again, the incentive structure here is sort of based on a combination of, you know, public shame and some really, really minimal fines. If you receive an F because you didn't actually post a grade, you get fined $1,250, which, you know, is how much some people's rent went up in the last year. So I think not a lot of landlords are shaking in their boots because of this.
Yeah, I think the government really thought of this as the grace period. So like from 2020 to 2024, I think it was a period of self-discovery to understand where your building stands and what improvements need to be made, because 2024 on, what happens is there are certain limits of emissions per building type that are already defined in Law 97. And if you go above that level, you have to pay a carbon tax per ton emitted over that level. So what the government really wants you to do is, okay, identify your rating. It could be a D in 2020. Understand ways to improve that. So by the time the phase two of the compliance regime kicks in, you're better placed.
Right, because in that phase two, it's $268 per ton that you're going over whatever your cap is, basically. So that could add up really quickly to the point that it actually becomes an effective financial incentive to comply.
And then in 2030 to 34, which is, call it phase three, your cap halves essentially. So the point is to be taking advantage of this time to gradually improve your building and take on better habits in general.
But it's a tough one, because it's, you know, it's a lot of short-term thinking, right? It's costly to improve buildings, especially older buildings. We're talking about replacing HVAC systems. We're talking about replacing entire, you know, windows across the whole building to be more energy efficient. We're talking about switching from oil to gas, I think. Might be wrong about that one.
Well, you just become more efficient in your energy generation. Really, most buildings right now are natural gas, and we want to shift from that to more renewable energy sources, which is a larger goal of the city, to be connected to renewable energy grids, which is a longer term solution.
Right. And ultimately, all of these measures should be not just good for the environment, but should save money too, because theoretically, all your energy bills should go down. But I'm sure in the short term, something that we all might be thinking is, if all of this capital improvement is required, does that cost just get passed on to renters who are already getting the short end of the stick in the supply and demand relationship of real estate in New York?
The answer is probably yes. And then if you're in a circumstance like a co-op, for example, like, that burden is probably being split evenly across everyone, whereas, you know, some individuals or some specific units might be worse actors than others, because they've already been working on improvements.
Right, right. But still, if you're an owner, this is stuff that's good for you in the long term. Like, it's making your unit or your house more efficient. This is a good thing. But if you're a renter, you might bear the cost, the burden of some of these improvements in the short term, and then you might not even be living there in the long term. And you could just see this putting more pressure on an already sort of defeated renter market.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately how you would want the market to work out is that these letters get evaluated as highly, or sorry, viewed as highly as like food grade ratings are, right? Like you're not going to go to a D restaurant. Whereas if you see a D building, you immediately know that you need to be discounted rent to live in there or something along those lines, which
I appreciate that very idealistic view, but I unfortunately in New York, I don't know how many renters have the luxury of I'll find another building because this one's a D rating. But it is the right way to plan for the future.
And with a more practical optimist lens on, there are also programs that are starting to be put in place by the city, by energy providers to actually try to incentivize financially these improvements. So New York City has this accelerator program, which is the city's flagship program to catalyze carbon reduction for private buildings. So they can, you know, provide kind of clean energy financing to help property owners actually finance projects that will reduce energy consumption. Con Ed actually provides rebates for energy reduction projects and improvements. I think National Grid provides a ton of tools and assessment capabilities as well. So they're the major players in the game are pretty much on board for this and trying to slowly start providing more resources and more programs. So the hope would be that as these fines go up, as this gets taken a little bit more seriously citywide, that more of these types of incentive refinancing programs will come into place to really push people over that edge to finally make the changes that are needed in their building.
And there might be actually an early mover benefit. Not that any of us or many of you listening are necessarily in control, but the earlier the better, given these programs are so readily available right now.
And I think, I don't know if we have the numbers to support this, but I think that this is kind of what we're talking about is more of an issue with older buildings that need significant upgrades. A lot of newer buildings seem to, as they're being built, you might as well use the latest technology, even if you're not doing the most expensive, to help insulate the building. I mean, all of that is cost saving for you up front. So it seems like less of a problem with newer construction. And I know New York City also has the goal that 100% of new buildings by 2030 are going to be net zero. And it seems way more possible with the new buildings to make sure they're built in a very efficient way. Whereas it's really that like upgrading, like imagine replacing all of the windows in an old building so that they're sealed and keep in heat better in the winter. I mean, those are things that are just tremendous tasks for a lot of these landlords to take on, particularly when there are tenants living in the building. It just makes it that much more complicated.
Yeah, I think that's a good transition into what are you as a renter or a tenant actually in control of and can help with this problem. And I'm sure these are things that you've seen on YouTube videos or TikToks about how to be more sustainable, but they are quite simple. So like Matt, you mentioned, keep your windows sealed. If possible, try to ask your owner if your windows don't seem to be sufficiently keeping the temperature of the room, see if they can be replaced because that's a short-term cost for a long-term fix. Cover your AC unit in the summer to ensure that in the same way you can regulate temperature better in your house. Look at the light bulbs in your house and make sure they're low-light LEDs so they're more efficiently using energy. And all of these will play a part in factoring into the amount of energy that your building does use, which then goes towards its both its grade and how it stacks up against the limit that it's applied.
And actually, out of curiosity, is there any public database where you can look up your building and its grade and maybe even some of the like data behind how that grade is assigned?
These are supposed to be published publicly. I'm not sure where we can actually find it.
Lost in the sea of city bureaucracy.
I mean, that would be like, especially if you were living somewhere for a long time and you actually make an impact on your landlord, it would be not just the grade improving, but also getting insight into how that grade is calculated and seeing like, oh, wow, look, we are using like 17% less gas in the winter. And maybe that was because I convinced everybody to replace the windows in my building or something like that, you know?
Well, actually, to Matt, come back to your point, that's what the energy grade rating is supposed to be. In the corner of it, it's supposed to show its improvement from the last time around. So that is supposed to be the very conspicuous, simple version of the calculation that you're saying.
And kind of brings up why we wanted to do this episode in the first place, right? I think for the last few years, we've all been walking around. We've been seeing these energy ratings, probably haven't given a ton of thought to it, but understanding kind of how it plays into a much larger strategy and plan here, I think our hope is if you're listening to this, start paying attention to what your building's energy rating is. If, like Ronajoy, your building doesn't seem to have an energy rating listed, even though it seems like it qualifies, figure out if you can ask your landlord, your management company, whoever, for that energy rating. I think a big part of that kind of like public shame aspect to the ratings is actually people knowing about them and asking questions about it and putting a little bit of pressure on building owners to make the improvements that the city needs to see in order to reduce those emissions by 2050.
And now's the time to do it too, because the fines are not that big yet. So you're not going to worry about like upsetting somebody by pointing out that, hey, teacher, you forgot to collect our homework. Yeah.
Or do your part and just take a shorter shower.
So that's our episode for today. While the energy ratings might not lead to any immediate change today, they're a key step in providing visibility and eventually accountability to building energy emissions. This season, we'll continue to unpack the issues that affect our community here in New York City. So stay up to date with us by following @DontSleepNY on Twitter and Instagram. And don't forget to subscribe and leave a review on your podcasting platform of choice. It really helps us help more people like you get informed. The music you heard in this episode was provided by Brooklyn-based artist and producer Jackery. We'll see you all in a few weeks. Until then, don't sleep.